Our last speaker today is Charles Milligan. He has a law degree from Harvard Law School and also a Master of Public Health. He's Executive Director of the Center for Health Program Development and Management at the University of Maryland. And his clients include Medicaid programs in Maryland, Michigan, and New Mexico. He gives presentations all over the country, including for the National Conference of State Legislatures, the National Governors Association, the Council of State Governments, the National Association of State Medicaid Directors, and the National Association of State Budget Officers. This past year, he gave 6 presentations before the U.S. Medicaid Commission, and he provided training on Medicaid financing for 150 staffers on Capitol Hill. Previously, he's worked for the Lewin Group, and he's a former Medicaid director from the state of New Mexico. He has several ties to Wisconsin. He tells me that his parents met at Lake Geneva. And every summer of his childhood, he spent a week vacationing in Hayward, Wisconsin. And he said he has seen the Tommy Bartlett water show more times than you. So his topic today is public-private partnerships and long-term care insurance. What are states doing? So no senator yet, so we'll go ahead with the talk.
I was afraid Karen was going to ask if any of my family members getting lost on the way to Wisconsin Dells would stand up, please. These are really professionally done things, and I just want to say this has been a first-rate operation for me. I've done some speaking, and the others here have as well. This is the most professionally produced, professionally organized, well-organized I have ever been part of, honestly. And Wisconsin state government has a great reputation nationally. The family care partnership programs are well-respected, well-renowned, but you all, you do what you do well. The one other thing I'll say before I just jump in is I, too, practiced elder law back in the day, and I'm almost to the end of my probation period for that activity. My task was to talk about public-private partnerships in a couple of different contexts. One context is in managed long-term care, which is, I'll get to it, but it's sort of a variation on the theme of family care. And the other task in public-private partnerships is private long-term care insurance as a component of financing. So I was just going to do a little bit of background information and then get into those two subject matters, the managed long-term care side and the insurance side. Okay, background. This is going to be sort of just setting up what I really want to get to. First of all, one of the sets up for managed long-term care, which is using capitation principles to deal with long-term care services, is that a lot of Medicaid money is spent on long-term care. In 2002, about $82 billion, reflecting 34% of all Medicaid spending. And you can see 57% toward the elderly, 43% toward younger people with disabilities of different types, developmental disabilities, people with physical disabilities, and other things. But a lot of money in long-term care on the Medicaid side. In the nursing home industry world, half of what they get is half of their revenue is from Medicaid. There is no other major source of no other major payer involved in nursing facility revenue. You can see the other big piece of this pie is out-of-pocket, which is people paying privately, spending down or using private resources. The Medicare piece, the 12% piece, Medicare has a very limited benefit for nursing facility care. It's usually rehabilitative after a hospital stay. I mean, it has to be after a hospital stay, but it's short-term, skilled, rehabilitative in nature, and other smatterings, small amounts of private insurance. One of the things I want to talk about in terms of one of the reasons states are pursuing managed long-term care is that Medicaid has trouble managing nursing facility costs because by the time somebody is on Medicaid, they're late into their length of stay in a nursing facility. And I'll get to another slide on this in a second. But if you look at the sources of payment, and this is a slightly different version of the data from before, the Medicaid funding on the left-hand side typically is in the later months of a person's length of stay. They've used Medicare benefits after a hospital stay. They've spent privately down. They've exhausted private long-term care insurance often. So by the time Medicaid comes in, it's really sort of catastrophic coverage after somebody's been in a nursing facility for a while, for the most part. There are some people Medicaid us right at the beginning, but this is one of the difficulties. If you take nothing else away from this presentation, just this slide is something that I think hasn't gotten enough attention in all of the states, all states' efforts to try and reorient their long-term care system toward community-based care. Let me just explain what's on the slide. The series of bars, the farthest to the left, is when somebody leaves a nursing facility after they've been there for less than 3 months, where do they go? The biggest bar, about 45%, are people who go back to the community. They'll go back to their home or into some other kind of community-based, residential-based setting. So if somebody leaves the nursing facility within 3 months, more people go to the community than go to other settings. You can see the smallest bar, about 18%, are people who die, and that's why they leave the facility in the first 3 months. And then the next bar, about 40%, are people who go to a different institution. So they're discharged from one place and go to the next. Medicaid is the payer for about 15% of the people during their first 3 months of stay. Because this reminder, this is when people are paying privately. This is when Medicare is using its benefit. As you kind of roll forward into the length somebody's been in a nursing facility, 3 to 6 month period of time, when they leave after their length of stay has been 3 to 6 months, some of them still go to the community, but it's now less than 20%. More people who leave in that period have died. And the majority now, over 50%, are just moving from one institutional setting to a different institutional setting. Medicaid is still not the payer yet for half the people. Medicaid, people are still spending down their resources and so on. When we get to the 6 month to 12 month period of time, very few people now, when they've been in the nursing home that long, go back to the community. They may have lost their home, they may have gotten out of their home. Their informal caregivers, their family members, adult children, and others may have gotten on with their lives. It may be much more difficult to kind of structure a community-based support system and housing. Medicaid is now, after 6 months, paying for more than half the people. But by the time Medicaid is aware of these people, because Medicaid is the payer now for half, the likelihood of going to the community is reduced. And if you roll it forward then from 1 year on, negligible amounts of people go back to the community. Medicaid becomes the payer. Every other financing source is exhausted. And now more people are dying and more people are just moving from one institution to another. And so one of the issues of managed long-term care is trying to intervene earlier with Medicaid in that mix. One of the issues, and I'll touch on it with the dual eligibles, people on Medicaid and Medicare, is this is an expensive population for both the Medicaid program and the Medicare program, which is generally well known, I think, at this point. Medicare benefits often drive Medicaid benefits. Medicare is is sort of dictating how Medicaid comes into the picture. A lot of times people go from an inpatient hospital setting, the duals, Medicare paid for that hospital stay, whether it was a hip fracture or some other kind of episode. Medicare paid for the stay. They were then discharged from the hospital on Medicare, admitted to a nursing facility on Medicare for that short-term rehabilitative stay, but they're in the nursing home then, often before Medicaid has a say in discharge planning, community-based service development. Similarly, on the physician side, Medicare under Part B, Medicare pays for the physician visit, but the doctor then writes the script. Used to be Medicaid would pay for all the prescriptions, but the doctor would write the script for pharmacy. Medicaid would have to pay, but Medicaid didn't have much right of intervening with that physician because that was a Medicare-funded visit. And there's other examples of this, durable medical equipment, home health, and other services the physician's order Medicaid pays for often. Okay, public-private partnerships and managed long-term care. One of the issues now is, and this is a variation on a theme, it's a variation on the family care program. A lot of states now are looking at trying to coordinate a Medicaid managed capitated program for dual eligibles and people who need nursing facility level of care, whether they're in the community or in nursing facility, with a Medicare capitated program under the new Medicare Special Needs Program, Medicare Advantage Special Needs Program, so that one company, one managed care organization, will get a capitation from Medicaid to take care of a person, a capitation from Medicare to take care of the same person. So it's two funding streams, unlike the family care program, but there's an opportunity to coordinate because it's the same company getting the two funding streams that has an incentive, presumably, to coordinate care. And this is some of the different services in the mix. The notion is, before I get to the detail on the slide, the notion is if a company is managing the Medicare benefits, that when that person goes into a hospital for surgery or heart attack or something, they're on the hook on the Medicare side, and they're aware of that enrollee. They know about that patient. And they know they're going to be on the hook on the Medicaid side of their business if there's a long-term nursing home stay that emerges from that hospital visit. And so the principle is, as yet largely not entirely untested, that the MCO will have an incentive to do aggressive early discharge and care planning because they're managing the Medicare early stay and they want to reduce their exposure on the Medicaid side. Now, one of the things I was asked to do is talk about using private sector entities in this model. And I wanted just to touch on real quickly some pros and cons. In terms of using a private sector model, one of the advantages is it's easier for them, and they are, in fact, seeking to get those Medicare Advantage special needs contracts from CMS for Medicare. The SNPs, or special needs plans, are Medicare capitated entities, capitated contracts, that in which the plan can target dual eligibles exclusively in their enrollment, or they can target nursing facility people exclusively in their enrollment and not sweep in the broader Medicare population. So there are special needs plans emerging on the Medicare side where a managed care organization is going to CMS, getting a contract to cover only those Medicare beneficiaries who are duals, because those plans also want to coordinate with Medicaid. These entities typically have broad networks on the provider side. They typically have better access to capital and infrastructure, and which is helpful for electronic medical records and all the rest of it. They may have more clout in dealing with nursing facilities, nursing homes. One of the issues with managed long-term care generally is who can really bring purchasing leverage and utilization management leverage to alter how nursing homes deliver services and how to deal with the discharge plan. And one of the theories is these private companies can manage that relationship better than a state or local agency can. And that there's ease of supports with informal caregivers, that managed care organizations privately can pay family members and spouses to take care of somebody as a form of informal supports. There are some significant cons to using private sector entities, one of which is there's a higher administrative cost and higher profit margin built in. And so one of the ways in which states are reluctant to go this route is they don't want a lot of Medicaid funding to pad the profit margin and the stockholder issues and all of that kind of stuff. There is a risk that these plans will abandon a market. A county government isn't going anyplace. These companies can. On the acute managed care side in Medicaid, these plans have, there's been some shakeout and they leave markets. And sometimes they are much less reluctant, they are much more reluctant and resistant to using traditional publicly funded or safety net providers. One of the issues just in terms of consumer direction, and this is using informal supports or paying family members, I mentioned that Medicaid in this period paid for $82 billion in long-term care costs. But there was a study that was done to try and put a value on if somebody put a price tag on all of the supports provided by family members for free, spouses, adult children, how much would that cost? $256 billion in that same period. And so one of the issues in all of these programs is, and with consumer direction generally, where you're paying people who might have previously been doing it for free, is a woodwork effect related to paying for all of that kind of stuff. And the other aspect of this, and I'm going to pick up the pace a little bit, is the theory I just laid out about using the same managed care organization for Medicare and Medicaid doesn't work if it's different organizations. If Medicaid contracts with Company A, but the beneficiary chooses Company B for Medicare, you don't get coordination. Or if the beneficiary on the Medicare side stays in fee-for-service, you don't get that coordination. And Medicare beneficiaries have the right to choose. You can't force them into the same company for their Medicare benefits that they're enrolled in for their Medicaid benefits. Okay, public-private insurance partnerships, so changing subjects now a little bit. The notion of this is, and it was touched on, it's a good segue from Roy's presentation. How do we try and get other financing into long-term care besides Medicaid? And one of the issues is private long-term care insurance offered by private insurance companies. But how do you create an incentive for people to buy private long-term care insurance? One incentive is trying to give them a reward in terms of Medicaid if they buy the coverage. So the notion, and then I'll get to the details in a second, the notion is if I, Chuck Milligan, go out and buy $200,000 in private long-term care insurance, and I know that if I exhaust that $200,000 benefit, I get to keep $200,000 more in assets and then qualify for Medicaid. I don't have to be quite as impoverished to qualify for Medicaid. I might have that incentive because then I know that that $200,000 I am protecting for my family or for others. So it's a way of trying to use a Medicaid asset change to incentivize me to go up buy private insurance. Four states are doing these programs now. Up until last week, there was a moratorium on more states doing it. Dollar for dollar programs in California and Connecticut, which this basically means is however many dollars of private coverage I get to save that, I get to preserve that many dollars in assets and qualify for Medicaid. $75,000 here, $75,000 there. Total asset protection is New York's model, which is if you buy a certain threshold of private long-term care insurance, you get to protect your assets regardless of what they may be at that time. And Indiana has a hybrid model. Who buys these policies in these four states? Typically late 50s to early 60s, typically in excellent or good health, so you are getting people to plan ahead, which is a goal. 90% of the people who bought these policies in these four states, it's the first time they ever bought private long-term care insurance. The majority own assets above $350,000, and the percent with monthly income above $5,000 a month is about 50% to 60% varying by state. So it is really targeting people who want to do this as a form of resource protection. The main part of this slide, and I'll just go through this quickly, the main highlight of this is it's too early to tell how effective these programs have been. In these states, 212,000 policies were sold under these programs. If you look down halfway down, only 250 of those people exhausted their private long-term care benefits. Only 119 accessed Medicaid. But it may be that it's just too early to tell because a lot of these people bought early and they may not need Medicaid down the road. So it's too early to tell whether it's been a good deal for the state. In other words, encouraging other private financing sources that would step up earlier so that Medicaid isn't dealing with the elder loss sort of stuff and the private insurance money is in the mix, whether that helps the state or whether it hurts the state because of how the eligibility rules have been simplified and made easier to qualify eventually. So that will conclude my presentation. Thank you all very much.
Questions for Mr. Milligan? Senator Russell?
Able to be here for this segment. When you say it's quote unquote too early to tell, how long is it since the early? How long have these others been in effect? These four or however many pilots there are.
Connecticut's began first. It's slightly more than 10 years old.
Okay.
So, I mean, roughly speaking, within the last 10 to 12 years.
Okay. And when. What do you think is necessary to tell the effectiveness?
I think that there needs to be just, to sort of sound like an academic for a second, just more time and more longitudinal data to see really the early purchasers, how many of them passed away before using their long-term care insurance benefits, how many of them never needed it, how many of them used it, how many of them made their way to Medicaid. But the time frame, given the age the people were when they bought the coverage, we haven't seen that cohort really get to the ages yet in many instances.
What would you have to say to us, now that the feds have opened up this door again for us, and we had been looking at it, but knew the door was closed, so stopped looking at it. It seems to me this is a way to address some of the divestiture issues and make it less interesting or less favorable for folks to go that route, or create more of a sense of moral obligation, maybe to pay their own way and to use their resources and not protect them. How would you advise a state like us right now, who has family care and just where we are in our mix? If we wanted to look at this, what would you say?
First of all, it's my understanding that there is a law in the books here that would basically want to start a program once the feds gave the go-ahead, which happened last week. There are some requirements in the federal law about how the private long-term care insurance partnerships need to work, which I can get into if you all want me to at some point. I think that one of the elements of the Deficit Reduction Act that was signed last week was to try to shift the balance in some ways between the divestiture elder law type strategies and some of the planning ahead type strategies like these long-term care insurance partnerships. These are really all Medicaid eligibility, elements of eligibility. They're not necessarily part of the same discussion of the service delivery model. But it may change the composition over time. It may change the composition of Medicaid's enrollment.
Your description of a public-private partnership sounds very similar to what we have here in the partnership program in Wisconsin, without any of the negatives that you described. Did you look at our partnership program, would you concur that that's sort of the assessment that's very similar to what you recommend, but we don't have the negatives that you outlined?
One of the, if Wisconsin thinks it's the best program, that's certainly you're right. One of the issues in Wisconsin compared to some, here's the point. I mean, one of the things we haven't touched on in any of the presentations is whether these programs are voluntary or mandatory. Wisconsin's programs are voluntary. The Medicaid beneficiary doesn't need to do it. It's not a mandatory program. Other states are looking at mandatory managed long-term care programs of different sorts. And if that's the case, states need to look at, in many respects, states are looking at different models because of how they may be able to utilize the special needs plan component of Medicare. Let me put it differently. I've looked at the two programs here. They are wonderful programs. I completely agree with Mark, who's the national expert on this stuff, on the outcomes and the effectiveness of these programs. But these programs everywhere have stayed very small, including here, very small programs. And states are trying to figure out how to really, some states we're working with and other states that are pursuing this are trying to figure out how can Medicaid on a mandatory basis require dual eligibles and require people meeting nurse facility level of care to enter a capitated model. And that's a different model than you've got here.
I want to give our other two speakers a chance now to come down for our last 15 minutes. We're going to turn on the microphones here. Jason, maybe you can do that, and you can address questions to any of our speakers.